three, two.
A good start, huh?
That's a good joke sometimes. Right there. That's a good joke.
What'd you do?
I did 3, 2.
That breaks the ice. That breaks the ice.
Yeah, okay. I'm good. Okay, let's start that over. All right, here we go. Right. So I'm doing these fingers. 3, 2, 1.
Hey guys, this is Gerard Massey. I'm a Pakistani American hunter. You guys are listening to That Reload Life.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of That Reload Life. If you're listening to this, you're in the right place. Today, we've got a special guest. We've got a guy on here who his entire life is about food, faith, and family. We're going to be talking about his heritage. We're going to be talking about why he got into hunting. And we're going to be talking about who he is as a person as a whole. Guys, I want to introduce to you today the one and the only Gerard Massey. What's up, buddy?
Hey, guys. How you guys doing?
Good. I said your last name right, correct?
Yeah, that was perfect.
Thank the Lord. I screw that up all the time.
And he failed to introduce.
I ruined it. Yes.
I'm just kidding. No. Hey, guys, I'm here as well.
My beautiful co-host, Ms. Stacy. All right. So, normally on an intro, brother, I plug my wife, but after our first failed intro, I guess I'm a little off my game.
Anyways.
All right. So, Gerard, you are, to get kind of give everybody a little bit about you, a little background, you are originally from Pakistan.
Yes, that's crazy. I was born in Pakistan in the province of Punjab. I was born out there, and I moved to America when I was 9 years old.
Do you remember a lot from Pakistan, like what that was like?
Okay, so, I was in Pakistan until I was 4 years old, and then after that, we moved to the Middle East. My parents were nurses in Kuwait, so my mom and dad were both nurses over there. So we lived there until the Gulf War, and there's a cool, really story behind that, too, is... So my brother was born 3 days prior to the Gulf War. So my dad was a nurse, and when the Gulf War started, my mom was at home. So my dad was in the hospital. They wouldn't let him leave because he was a nurse. And then they were getting a lot of wounded soldiers and stuff that were coming into the hospital. So basically, they shut down the whole country, and there was no flights and stuff that were leaving. So my mom took me and my brother home. I was 5 years old. My brother was 3 days old. So she took a bus home, and this is in August. So Middle East is hot. It gets about 125 degrees out there, Yeah. So she drove us. She actually took a bus from Kuwait during the war. She was still in her probably early 30s. Took two kids, a son who was 3 days old in that heat. Didn't have no diapers, didn't have nothing, and a five-year-old son all the way from Kuwait to Jordan, and that's where they actually caught a flight and flew into Pakistan.
Man.
So, yeah. Starting off pretty heavy, but that's kind of like a little background of, where I come from. And then after the Gulf War ended, my family moved back to Kuwait. And then from there in 93, that's when I moved to America. And I was 9 years old around that time.
Right on, man.
So what was it that actually brought your family to America?
So my dad's sister, they used to live out here. So they lived in California. They were originally from New York, moved to California, and they sponsored us. So, America is a much better place to live than Pakistan. We're Christians. So Christians are highly persecuted out there in Pakistan. So, you move to America for religious freedom, and better opportunities. My parents wanted us to have a better future for their kids.
Did you guys, if you don't talk about anything that you don't want to, but did you guys have any, scary moments? Like, did you remember over there, being Christians and,
with that not being as acceptable of a, choice of faith?
Right. So, me in particular, I didn't, I was really young, so I basically I didn't start school when I was in Pakistan. But my parents, they tell me stories all the time when my dad was young and he was going to college. So he was in college with his buddies and, they would go out to eat and stuff after. And one particular restaurant they were at, they found out that my dad was a Christian, so they actually got the place and threw him out and broke him, and on the street, because they don't want another Muslim to eat after a Christian. That's how down to look upon on Christians. And also my uncles, having a Christian last name, my last name's Masih, and that's a Christian last name, so everybody knows you're Christian. So my my uncles and stuff are educated, they went to school and stuff, but it's really hard for them to get a job because of their last name. So they would get passed up on jobs, opportunities, even though they had a better qualification than the person that was next to them applying for that job, they wouldn't get it because they were Christian, So I also had my wife, when she was in college, there were groups of Muslims who would come to her and they would threaten her and they would, tell her to convert to Christianity. If she didn't, like, they would kidnap her and they would kill her. Wow. So there was, and that's a lot of the people who would do that, a lot of people who were affiliated with the Taliban, so they were just a group of them would come in the colleges and threaten people. And she was, I think her college, it's a big college, it's a big university of Lahore. And I think there were only two Christians over there, and she was one of them. And, she would get that a lot. She would get lower grades in her class because of her faith. They would tell her, hey, if you convert, we'll give you a higher grade. Like, they would tell her straight up, So that was a big part of her going to school. A lot of people get a lot of persecution, on a daily basis. Some of the Christian faiths, educational, lack of educational resources, lack of governmental support, don't support you because you're the minority. They say they do, in paper they do, but in reality, it's a different case. It's a third world country. It's not like America,
Yeah.
So it's definitely a lot of persecution out there.
Man, it's crazy because so many people don't. I can't fathom a lifestyle like that, of having to live every day, knowing that I'm not going to get the same opportunities or I may be kidnapped or whatever. That's some deep stuff, man.
And not only that, bro. Faith is kind of, it's some hard waters to tread through, and to be able to have such unwavering faith when you're being put under so many tests and so many trials, it would have been easy for you guys to just go with the masses and agree with what they were telling you. So it says a lot about your faith to not waver under those circumstances.
Right. The faith that the Christians have back home is amazing. It's something that I can't really relate to because I grew up in America and we don't have anything like that.
Yeah.
When I was out there, I was out there visiting, and just something that's so common, that's so weird to us, is when you go to church, there's a guy standing outside with an AK-47 to protect the church because they have suicide bombers and anybody can just come in and blow themselves up. So when I was out there, they didn't know who I was. So when I walked into church, they had to pat me down and check me to make sure that I don't have anything. So that's something that's a everyday reality back home as a Christian.
That's crazy. When we go to church, that's really the last thing on your mind is something like that happening.
An attack.
Right.
Yeah. It's man, that's deep. Switching gears on that real quick, because I want to hear more about you. I do want to circle back around to what we were just talking about. You grew up here. You got moved here when you were 9 years old. You grew up here, and we found you online, and you're a very avid hunter.
Yes.
What age did you get into that?
I got into hunting when I was 26 years old. So not as a child, but as an adult. But what attracted me to hunting was my dad used to hunt back home with him and his brothers. They used to hunt back home, and I was too young to go with them back then. I was just a little kid, but with that, I was told the stories of bedtime stories. Sure. mine were hunting, and then he would tell me, hey, when you go to America, we're gonna go hunt, we're gonna go camping, we're gonna go fishing. And he just told me stories of them, him and his brothers, hunting. But when moving to America, you're moving, it's real tough moving to a whole different country. you know, to learn a language and, you know, to start your nursing career all over again, you know, and then taking care of your two kids and a wife, hunting kind of gets thrown on the back burner, you know. Yeah. So I didn't get to hunt with my dad when I came here. But, you know, the stories of him, you know, tell me about hunting and stuff, something that always stuck to me. And that's something that I always wanted to do. And then it's something after I finished school and I started working and, you know, I kind of picked up.
So did you just like wake up and go, today's the day? Or is there like somebody in your life that like, pulled you back into it?
No, so what happened was back home, my dad used to hunt with a pellet gun. So he used to hunt a lot of pigeons and a lot of quails and doves, basically upland game. And they would use pellet guns. So when I started working and stuff, I actually bought my dad a pellet gun. I was like, hey, man, here's a pellet gun. You know, you can start shooting it and stuff, whatever you want to do with it, reminiscing of, you know, your time back home. So when I got the pellet gun, I actually took it to my cousin's house. And then my dad and his dad used to hunt. So me and my cousin were just in the backyard, and we were, you know, just planking little targets in the backyard. And I was like, hey, dude, we should start getting into hunting because, you know, parents used to do it. It's something that I always wanted to do. And he was like, yeah, man, we need to, you know, we should really look into it. So we found out everything. What do we need to do to go out hunting, and took our hunter and safety course. And we still didn't have a concept of shotguns or anything like that, or rifles, because, you know, back home they hunt with pellet guns, and what they also use, they have nets. So what they do is they have two dogs that go out, flush the birds, and on the other side, they flush them into the net. So that's how they capture the birds. Huh. So, yeah. So, hunting with it.
What, flush the birds or hold the net?
Either one. I'd feel comfortable with that.
Yeah, so some, you know, hunting that back there is a little different. We do hunt with shotguns too, you know, but something that's real common to everybody is a pellet gun, you know.
Yeah.
So so basically we had our hunter safety course, and me and my cousin took our pellet guns to a shooting range to sight them in. And you know, we were shooting them, we were like little, you know, yeah. You know, and the guy next to us, he shot his gun. I thought, boom! I thought, oh my god, dude, what are you shooting? and he's like, oh, I'm going to Africa next week and hunt elephants. And I'm like, what? So, you know, to say that hunting had a real humble beginning is an understatement. You know,
yeah.
So, you know, just hanging out at the range and just learning from people, talking to people with shotguns. They told us to get into bird hunting, got to use a shotgun. This guy that I work with, he was a chucker hunter. So he took us out for the first time. He took us chucker hunting, and still having no concept of hunting, me and my cousin, we had like, you know, a whole day worth of food in our pack. You know, yeah. We had like a whole case of animal, all 100 rounds in our backpack. You know, going chucker hunting.
We're going on a week-long voyage.
Right? And going chucker hunting, you know, chucker hunting in California, the opener is hot. It's like 110 degrees, 105 degrees, and you're going up and down the hill all day. So, you know, it really beat us up. You know?
No, I don't want to do that.
Yeah, but just starting from that and meeting more people and just getting to know people, making those connections, we got into hunting. And what really got me hooked to hunting was duck hunting. And, you know, my cousin actually put up for a draw and got picked. And I was actually back home. I got married at the time, and I came back home, and he went, you know, for the first time without me. So when I came back, he's like, hey, man, this is what you need to do. It's fun. We got to go out. So that's what we did. He took me out for the first time, and, you know, just something about duck hunting, man, just walking to the blind and waiting to the blind and just sitting in the marsh and waiting for the, you know, the light to come up and looking at all the stars and just listening to the marsh wake up, you know, it was something amazing, you know, and just having the first flight of ducks fly over and, you know, whistling right over your head and you can't shoot yet because it's not light and you're ducking down, you know, it was something amazing to me. And then, so the first flight of ducks that came in, my cousin was like, hey, man, go ahead and take a shot on them. So I got up, I shot, I was surprised, got to hit them, you know, I got it. I still wasn't good at your shotgun. So, I waited through the water. He's going to go pick it up. So I brought it back, and we both looked at it. He said, dude, that's not even a duck, man. That's a coot, you know?
So, those are good for jerky.
Right. So, but you know, I didn't care at that time because I was excited being out there, you know, something new to me. And, you know, I just got hooked to hunting from there, you know?
You know, so. When I was a kid, you know, my dad, he was always a big game hunter. He was always a deer hunter, but something that got me, I feel like got me the itch to hunt was dove hunting.
Okay, yeah.
I was my dad's bird dog for years. And, right. Oh yeah, he said he always said I was the best bird dog in the field. And, but you know, I feel like that kind of gave me a taste of the camaraderie, and gave me you know, because it's relaxed, everybody's, you know, hollering at each other and talking and everything. But I still got that, you know, hear the shots, and the place that we used to go when I was a kid was, you know, it was hot. You see a lot of dove and everything. Mm-hmm. Better than, you know, going and sitting in the freezing cold and not seeing anything, waiting for a deer. Duck hunting is something I actually have only done very few times. I love it.
Okay.
A buddy of mine got me into it. I tell you, I look like a duck hunter. I got the gun, I got the waders, I got all the gear, man. I could be in a magazine, but
he doesn't have the duck.
I don't.
You got the beard going too, right?
Yeah, you know, I need to get mine out a little bit by the power of yours. But anyway, but no, man, like I duck hunting the first time that I did it. It was so different than deer hunting that right. I was hooked on it, because everything you described is what is a part of duck hunting. And when you actually have ducks come in, man, where I'm from, it ain't like where you're from. If you get to shoot at like five ducks, you've had a good day. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But
California's the same way. Southern California's the same way, bro. So you're not missing out on much.
Do you mostly waterfowl hunt in California?
I do. Last couple of years, I had opportunity to hunt in different places. So I went to Kansas last year, and with the guys from Passion or Pursuit invited me out, and me and my brother went out, and it's just totally different ball game, man. You know, hunting in dry fields and having their tornado of Canada geese come over you. You know, me and my brother were there and called a shot. So you're hunkered down. You're not even looking up, you know, but you hear them. You hear them, and you're like getting excited about that. And then, like, they go, all right, take them. So you get up and shoot. And my brother just looked at him. He didn't even pull his trigger, bro. He was just like, wow. Like, this is something we're not used to in California, man. So it was an awesome experience. So the only other place that I hunted ducks out of California is Kansas. Also Texas. I hunted in Texas last year. That was fun, too. So those two states, you know, that I hunted out of California.
Did you fly to both of those states?
I did, yes.
You did? So did you bring meat back home? Were you able to do that? Or did you eat it there?
So we ate some there. And, of course, I brought some back home. You know, pulling the trigger is the start of my hunt for me. I think the big part of hunting for me is bringing the meat home.
Yeah.
You know, so like I said, my dad, you know, his stories and stuff is what got me into hunting. But he's older now; he's not able to go out hunting with me. You know, medical reasons, bad knees, and you know, the weather's not as conducive for, you know, older guy to go out hunting. So, you know, bringing home that meat and you know, just sharing it with him and making good meals out of it, it makes him part of the hunt. You know what I mean? So it makes the bond that he didn't have as a child, you know, hunting, growing up in Pakistan and hunting, it kind of all gets brought together through a duck that I bring home and share a meal over the table.
Yeah, man. Have you ever done any, have you ever done any big game hunting at all?
I have. I do big game hunting too. I'm hunting a lot in California, but I haven't been able to actually shoot a deer yet. California is a pretty tough zone. I'm hiking up and down the hills, basically just hiking with my gun. That's what I'm doing so far. But I was able to go to Utah 2 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago. And I did have a cow deprivation tag. I shot a cow elk out there, which is amazing.
Did?
I did. Yeah.
That's
so that was
a lot
awesome.
Of meat, dude.
It's a lot of meat. Yeah. Good thing we drove there, because I had to bring all the meat back home.
Yeah. That would have been so expensive to bring back on a plane.
Right. Yeah. So, and then, I just came back from Texas last week, and I shot a Neil guy out there. So
what?
A Neil guy? So have you guys heard of that?
Well, you were talking about Neil guy kebabs with me earlier.
Right. So
that's kind of native to Pakistan, isn't it?
It is. So a little backstory of a Neil guy. Neil guy is basically you guys heard of King's Ranch?
No.
Like Ford's King's Ranch.
Oh, in like Texas.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's one of the biggest ranches in Texas, and they basically have a cattle ranch. And then what they used to do back in the 30s was they used to feed their workers with cattle, right? But that was getting too expensive for them, so they wanted to find like an alternative way that would be cheaper but still good meat to feed the workers. And they brought Neil guy from India. So they imported him. Yeah, so they imported him here, and over the years it kind of got loose. Now they're more populated in Texas and South Texas than there are in India itself. So
I gotta look that up. How do you spell that?
N-I-L-G-A-I.
N-I-L-G-A-I.
It's that Neil guy.
Neil, hey, what's up, Neil? Hey, guy. That was so cheesy.
Sorry, it's what I'm about.
Look at that thing. That's a beast.
Oh, that's big. I thought this was a bird.
Yeah, it's a big.
That's what I was thinking the whole time.
Did you really?
Yeah. I thought he was making, like, bird kebabs. This is cool.
No.
I am blonde. It's a massive horse.
It is. It's like look at that thing. You could ride that too.
It looks like a hippo on a horse.
So it's actually a antelope, and I think the second biggest antelope in the world.
Really?
Yeah. So
how does it taste?
Yeah.
Does it taste funky?
No. You know what? Honestly, it tastes the closest game that I've tasted that's closest to beef, which is crazy.
Really?
Yeah.
It looks like it.
So does it have a lot of fat content?
No, it doesn't. It's actually lean. Really
so it's
lean.
Pretty lean, like deer and venison and all.
It is, yeah, exactly.
I guess
venison's
a very broad term. So.
Yeah. So it's actually it was a cool hunt because the animal itself, Nilgai, in Pakistan and India. Well, more in Pakistan, it's starting to become extinct because of overhunting and people just, you know, not really taking care of it and stuff. So I always wanted to hunt a Nilgai, and I don't think I will ever have the opportunity to hunt that in Pakistan itself because of it's going endangered. So it was cool to, instead of traveling like 10,000 miles, I traveled 2,000 miles to Texas, and I was able to shoot that animal, bring it home, and share that meat with my dad and my family. So that was cool. That's a native
awesome,
animal.
Man.
Yeah.
So you got that in the freezer right now?
I do.
How many freezers you got?
Oh man, I got like two freezers, and just trying to get filled. Yeah, starting to get full.
Box freezers or uprights?
I have a box freezer and an upright, but to be honest with you, meat goes real fast because I have a huge family, bro. I have a huge family in America now, so
does your parents live near you?
They do. We actually live together, so it's like a cultural thing.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So I live with them.
I was listening to you on a video you had on YouTube, and you talk about you bringing a duck home and giving it to your dad, and him just like taking it and plucking it and everything,
right,
getting him feeling like back in the day when he used to hunt and stuff.
Right, exactly. That's what I was saying earlier. It's like the time that he lost of, you know, because every dad wants to go hunting with a child. You know what I mean? I can't wait till I take my kids out hunting. You know, so him having not having the opportunity. I think this kind of, makes him part of the hunt and give him the opportunity that he didn't have as a child, right?
Yeah.
So even with the new guy who brought it home and he was the first one, he's like, hey, man, let's butcher it up. I'm like, dude, I just came home, man. Give me some time to relax and kick back, right? But he's so excited.
Gotta get after it, man.
Right? Yeah. So he wants to get down. He wants to butcher it up and everything. So which is really cool, man. I love the aspect of, you know, that's becoming one of my favorite part of the hunt is just butchering up the meat and preparing meals out of it.
It's true, man, because and even when you save the meat and you pull that out of the freezer, you know, and this is something I want to do with my kids is, you know, a practice that we have when we butcher an animal and get all the quarters and the pieces that we want, how we want them, the steaks and whatnot, we date it and we label it. So I'll put like the date it was harvested. And then we'll put what kind of animal it is,
and
male
doe
or female.
Doe versus buck.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's a story, you know?
Right, so like, exactly.
I can't wait for the day that one of my boys takes an animal and I'm able to document that. And then we pull it out and we're like, hey, Jace, man, you know, this is your deer. And then we get to talk about it again, you know? So I feel like the story doesn't end with just, you know, taking the animal. Like,
exactly.
Like you said, you know, the hunt starts with, you know, obtaining the animal or harvesting the animal. I don't actually pull the trigger myself, but, you know, he brings the meat home and I'm usually a part of all the butchering and the packaging and it's so fulfilling. It's ridiculous.
Right.
Like you've got this hoard of meat and you're like, yes, like,
I don't know,
it's awesome.
It's when my kids started eating venison. And eating the stuff that I was bringing home, that was like a big fulfilling moment for me because it was like, man, like ultimate provider mode over here.
When they were babies and they would eat meat, the deer meat for the first time, it was like, I win as a parent.
So, dude, like, you broke into, you started, you were 26, you got into hunting. You know, you decided birds were your, 'cause it's going to be your thing, you know, kind of duck hunting and everything. I mean, like, if I know anything, I know that duck hunters are a tight-knit group.
And, they sure are. They
It's a very clicky, you know, expensive sport. But what was that like? You know, because I know you are from Pakistan. And what was that like, you know? And I know that hunting in general, let's just be honest, it's a white-dominated sport. I'm not trying to get racial here, but you know how, you know.
Stereotypes.
Yeah, stereotypes.
Yeah.
Did you have any, like, blowback, like, and coming into the hunting industry? Not even the industry, just starting to hunt in general, when you would show up to a field or something. Did you have any, like, blowback from that at all?
Yeah, man, most definitely. So, like I said, you know, I started hunting a lot more when I started duck hunting.
Yeah.
And we have a local refuge that I live by. It's about 30 minutes from my house, San Jacinto. So when we first started hunting there, you know, it's like a sweatland system, and all the hunters that gather up in the morning and they wait over there, and you know, after they shoot their ducks, they come and check it into the check station. So you know, just being out there, no one really talked to us, bro. It was weird. It was you know, because growing up in Southern California is such a melting pot of ethnicity, right? It's Southern California has people from all over the world, and you know, racism was nothing that we're ever, you know, something we encountered until I got into duck hunting, you know, which is, it's crazy because, like you said, you know, duck hunting and or any hunting in general is predominantly white, you know, white man's sport, right? That's what they call it. So, yeah, people, man, when people come in and I would actually go up to them, like, hey, man, how you guys doing? You know, because we're new, want to talk to everybody, want to learn anything. They would just look at us and just not even say anything. I was like,
really?
Goodness.
Oh, yeah. I was like, That was something so odd to me. And then, you know, just talking to people, and, you know, there's one guy who started talking to us. He's like, yeah, bro. You know, and I was telling them that it's really hard for, you know, to actually kind of learn hunting in general and learn everything about it because nobody wants to say anything about it. And he's like, yeah, bro, I'm going to be honest with you, it's because your skin color. And I was like, really? Yeah. And he's like, yeah, bro, it's because I'm going to be honest with you, man. Not a lot of people will talk to you because, you know, it's because of your race. You know, a lot of people look at you and be like, hey, what are you doing here? This is not your sport. You know what I mean? And what are you doing here? And it's so weird because, like, when you think about that statement, is where I come from in Pakistan is so embedded into hunting, right? So the country of India and Pakistan, they were divided in 1942. Actually, today is Pakistan Independence Day. It's funny that you're doing a podcast today. It is, yeah. So during the split in, you know, August 14, when Pakistan and India were splitting into two different countries because of religion, you know, I was talking to my grandpa, and he was telling me stories of, you know, they call it the Great Migration. It's when the Sikhs and the Hindu people stayed in India, and the Muslim people, they went to, you know, Pakistan. And, you know, the whole country was in turmoil, so there was no grocery stores open, there was no restaurants open. It was basically a civil war with a bunch of migrating people, right? So what my grandpa would tell me is they would actually break branches off the trees and fasten them into slingshots. And, you know, and to get their food, they were, you know, shoot quails that were on the ground or, you know, doves that were on the trees. And that's how they survived their migration from India to Pakistan.
Wow.
So, you know, so when I hear that statement, it's like, you know, hunting is only a white man's sport. I'm like, dude, like, my country is actually formed on the cost of hunting. You know what I mean?
It's so ignorance, people, basically. Lack of knowledge for that, because, like you said,
lack of knowledge in
there.
Right.
Well, I mean, look, right. If you go back in history, man, like, it's mm-hmm. it's where it originated was over in Europe. You know what I mean? And
right.
And that not originated, but, you know, I mean, it, hunting didn't start in America. You know,
right?
You know, it didn't start in England. You know, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, so that's mm-hmm. nuts. How'd you deal with that? Because I would have been pissed. I'd have been like, sucker. Let's go.
I mean, yeah, you do get upset. You get upset by it, but, you know, what are you going to do about it? You know, the only thing to make a situation worse is to get in a fight with them, argue and fight with them over it, right? I think the best thing to do is just like give them their space, you know what I mean, and keep doing what you're doing. And that's what I continue to do. I kept on coming back to the refuge. I kept on hunting, you know, with my cousin, and our group just got bigger and bigger, and you know, and people just started respecting us after that. And now when I go out there, people love me out there now. You know what I mean? They come and talk to me. They, you know, about which blinds I'm hunting or which blinds they're hunting. And you know, and it's funny now, especially through social media, I get invited everywhere to go hunt, you know. Yeah. All different states. And you know, I get invited to hunt in Australia, hunt in South Africa, you know. So it kind of went full circle from nobody wanted to talk to me because I'm Pakistani, and now everybody wants to talk to me because I am a Pakistani hunter. And it's all because, you know, I think it's all because I stuck to my roots, and I, you know, stuck true to who I was and not just, you know, change something that I'm not. So
dude, I think that's amazing. I think that's something that we all can take a page from, you know.
Thanks, man.
Well, I mean, like, just in general, I mean, like, there's our country right now is the most divided I've ever seen it in my lifetime, and I think it's because people don't give themselves time to get to know someone else. They don't take time to listen to that person about who they really are and right. why they're here or why they're doing what they're doing or why they believe what they believe, you know. And I think a lot of right. that, and I commend you on sticking to yourself and sticking to your faith in the fact of, you know, we talked about this earlier, you know,
right.
is love will and loving somebody and showing that gratitude but you know, showing that love. It may take a little while. It may be longer. It may be a harder road to take, but it's gonna, like you said, it's gonna come full circle.
You know, it does. It really does, man.
You sticking to yourself and got it now. You see, people are inviting you everywhere because you are Pakistani. You know what I mean? And that's, I feel like that's God's way of blessing you and showing you that you did the right thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks, man. Yeah, I think you're really right about. You know, just taking time out to really understand people and just accepting people that they're different, right? I think a lot of times, you know, we put ourselves, you know, in a lot of different groups, either that's, you know, financial groups, you know, or, you know, race or, you know, or occupational, you know, we're always putting ourselves in different groups and hanging out with people that we're comfortable with or people that we know, you know. But I think it's really important to get to know who the next person is. And once you do get to know them, just accept them for who they are. You know what I mean? And I don't think it's our job, or, you know, I'm a Christian and I don't think it's my job to convert anybody, you know, but I think it's my job to just show the love that Christ has. You know what I mean? I think by doing that, by just showing them love, I think that goes a long way. And, you know, and like you said, it does come around. You know what I mean? People will come up to you, like, you know, respect you for who you are. And when they're going through a hard time, they'll come and talk to you just because you stuck to who you were. They didn't judge them. And they just showed them the love that Christ has for us, you know, and I think that's really important.
Well, I'm going to be honest. It wasn't because you're Pakistani that made us want to invite you into our squad. It was, for one, your story, of course, was inspirational, but your photography is awesome.
It's on point.
Oh, thank you. Yeah,
it tells a story. Like, a lot of your photos that you take, it's like, it's not just, you know, you shooting a bow or sitting on a cooler. It's like, I almost felt like you waking up early and sitting there by the sunset and, you know, the cold air and enjoying a hot cup of coffee. So.
And those are the best photos. The best play, whether it's food or a lifestyle shot. Those are the best photos that when you look at them, you feel like it speaks to you a little bit and tells a story. And I feel like your photos do that.
Thanks, man. Thanks. You know, honestly, that's exactly what I try to do. Is I try to take a picture, and I want the picture to speak for itself, you know, and for the picture to tell a story of how my day was, you know, and that picture doesn't have to be a kill shot, you know. It could be me climbing up the mountain and I'm really, really tired and just sitting there and just drained. I think that picture shows a lot more and tells a lot more about who I am, about my hunt, versus just me posted up next to a kill, you know.
Yeah. So glad we cleared the air on that. So a lot of the stuff that I see you and your wife cooking, you know, we are huge food snobs, and we dabble with all different kinds of stuff, but like a lot of the styles and seasonings and spices and stuff that you guys are cooking are dishes that we've never actually tried. So, you know, you cook a lot according to your culture, correct?
I do. So I'm gonna be honest, I'll do all the cooking that I do is all outdoors. So I love barbecue, I love, you know, making steaks and stuff. Everything else that's indoors is my wife. I don't touch anything that's inside.
That's cool, man. I tell you, dude, yeah. But when we first got together, that's kind of how what our thing was, is she was more the indoor cook and I was the meat guy. I was the guy going out on the grill and cooking everything on the grill. And now we've kind of, as you know, our cooking, evolved. You know, we do a little bit of everything. And both of us are doing it. But yeah, dude, that's how it was for me too. At one point.
Yeah, and you're right. I think I'm starting to notice that too. That we're starting to just mix more, right? So we like to get together and spice up all the stuff together. And so we're doing it together. Like we spice it up together, and then I go out and grill it. And you know, sometimes she helps with the temperatures and stuff like that. So it's like a combination of us working together, which is awesome. I love that, man. I love that, especially with hunting, man, bringing the whole family in, you know, through the meal. You know, I love that about it.
The most thing that I'm drawn to that I see is like a lot of sauces and a lot of marinades and stuff like that. We don't do much. So what would you say is like your favorite way to cook? Like, you know, we talked about the Neil guy or even like duck. What's kind of like your go-to for that?
Yeah, so our culture, Pakistan and India, they're really known for the spices, right? So it's a land of spices. So we use different kind of spices, a lot of sauce and stuff. So the reason the Pakistani cooking and stuff is so deep in, you know, deep in flavor and, you know, spices and stuff, because all the different empires that actually, to go by the history of it, all the, you know, empires and stuff that actually controlled India, right? So the Mughal Empire, which is huge, you know, and I think that was overtaken by the British Empire in the 1800s. But during that period when, you know, most of the foods and stuff, like the Sikh kebab that you guys hear about from India, and, you know, a lot of the kormas and those kind of dishes were all the dishes that were for the kings and stuff. So when the British Empire came and they took over, a lot of those royal cooks, basically they were left jobless, right? So they actually came, they started, you know, their own vendors and stuff, basically street food. And then so that's when you know, food from the royal table became available to the common man, you know what I mean?
Wow.
So yeah, so that's, we have a lot of history in our food, we have a lot of spices and stuff, different spices and stuff that we use. Just to go a little more deeper into that, so when they did become street food, a lot of the food that you used to cook for the kings and stuff, some of them were like Sikh kebab, right? So we have two different kind of kebabs in Pakistan. So what do you guys call kebabs? It's something that you put like a cube meat on a skewer. But back home is different. Kebabs are basically ground beef that's mixed in spices, and you cook them over an open flame.
Mashed on a stick.
Yeah, mashed on a stick, exactly. So we call those shish kebabs.
And
it's actually the skewer.
That was a horrible impression. That's terrible.
Yeah. It's actually a Sikh, so it's a Sikh kebab. So Sikh is actually the skewer.
S-E-I-K.
It's actually a Sikh. Yeah, so
we are so freaking American. We are so white American. It's the sheesh, right? You know.
But over the years, it kind of translated, and you know, now everybody says sheesh kebab. But it's actually the Sikh is actually the skewer. So that's what they use. It's basically ground beef or ground lamb. They use a lot of lamb out there, and mixed it with a bunch of spices, and you know, and it's cooked over open flame. So that's kebab. And then what we call tikka or tikka masala, I don't know if you guys ever been to an Indian restaurant or not. Mm-hmm. So tikka is really big too. And that's basically traditional American kebab, what you guys cook. And that's taking cubes of meat and put them on skewers with vegetables and stuff, and then cooking that over a flame. So we call that a tikka. So that's a two little different. That's originally.
I want to make a sheikh kebab.
Sikh.
See, that gum.
So, okay, so now I like really want to try this. What would, so our first time getting into this, what should we try as our first dish?
Ah, man, okay.
Like something that's just like, you know, authentic.
Authentic and easy to make.
To Pakistan or that type of food. Like we need, I'd like to look it up and we could try to throw some reload into it.
But yeah.
Which I know the seasonings are probably a lot different. We need to have be inspired for a new blend or something.
That'd be cool. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, one dish, one type of traditional delicious dish. What should we go for first?
Okay, well, how about we do just like the American kebabs, right? So you get whatever cubed meat that you have. You can use venison, you can use beef, whatever you have. So what I like to do is we should like marinate it in a yogurt-based sauce. So you get plain yogurt and make sure it's not fat-free. So, you know, and that, these are traditional spices. We use a lot of, okay, so when I make spices and stuff, and when I make my, I don't really use teaspoon. I pinch of this, pinch of that. So I can't really tell you the exact increments of what to use. But some of the stuff that I traditionally put in the yogurt-based sauce is salt, red chili peppers, black pepper. And if you're doing like wild game, I like to put like 2 sticks of butter in it because it's so lean. That's what I did with my lean. You know, that's what I did.
Cumin. The yogurt?
Yeah, I like it style.
Yeah.
Butter, baby.
So you would like melt it and mix it into the yogurt?
Exactly. And then cumin seeds, a lot of cardamom. I don't know if you guys are familiar with those spices or not. You guys are? Okay.
Not much. And then, I mean, cumin we are, but not cardamom.
Not cardamom. So there's two kind of cardamoms. I always use green and black cardamom. So so you take all, lots of garlic and cinnamon stick. So what I do with all those ingredients, I get them and I blend them into a real fine powder and it's all mixed up. And then I basically mix that with the yogurt. And then I add my meat to it, mix it all in, let it marinate for a couple of hours, and then just go out and cook it on the grill. And it comes out amazing, man, I'm telling you.
So but with all those spices, does it get the yogurt like a certain color?
Yeah, it's almost like an orangish, reddish color. Yeah. I don't know if you guys seen any of my stories that I post up. I think I tagged you in it, Joe. I think you've seen some of them.
Yeah.
And, it gives it a little orange, orange vibrant color to it. And it's amazing, man. Even just the smells of all the spices.
It gets me drooling.
Yeah, well, that's what's got me wanting to dabble with it. So so you said yogurt, not fat-free. This it was like a Greek yogurt, just like a plain Greek yogurt, would it be? Cause it's...
Yeah, just a plain Greek yogurt,
Not pumpkin spice yogurt.
No, you know
I'm kidding.
Yoplait kids, you know.
Strawberry banana.
Yeah, strawberry banana yogurt.
We're doing this.
That sounds
so. When you do a marinade like that, are you typically using like a red meat or more of a poultry?
You can use. It doesn't really matter, honestly. It doesn't matter. But mostly red meat.
Okay.
A Sikh kebab. That's it, right?
Yes.
All right, man.
Yes.
I don't want to butcher it for a third time. That's what I want to do. What's got me interested is the Sikh kebab. And I want to take some of those pork panko crumbs with venison wrapped all in that.
Yeah.
And tell me if this would be butchering it, but the venison on there, light thing of mustard, the pork panko, cook at jazz over some charcoal.
I mean, you're butchering probably the traditional aspect of the. Well, you want to keep it on a stick.
Well, I'm talking about the mustard be a light binder. I can't win.
Never. No, really. Go ahead, Gerard.
The yogurt will bind it. It's a good binder, also.
Oh, well, yeah. So, I forgot.
Yeah. So you don't have to worry. have to worry about the yogurt.
Do you like mustard?
No, not really.
That is a hard no.
To be honest, I don't, to be honest with you.
Well, cool, man. I guess, do you have any big game hunts planned this year?
You know what? I don't. The only big game hunt that I had was the one I went to Texas for. But I'm just going to do my local deer. I do that every year. So I didn't count that as my big game hunt no more.
I got you.
I do have... I'm going to dove opener. I do that every year. So I'm going to Arizona on the first to hunt doves. So that's going to be awesome. That's always, you know, bringing all the family together and just going out, like you said earlier, so relaxed, huh? You're talking, having a good time, barbecue at night, you know, so that's a good way to start off my hunting season. And then the end of September, I'm going to drive up Northern California to hunt geese, early geese season. But also, I'm hunting turkey in Northern California in November.
There you go.
And then and then my fingers crossed, if everything works out right, I'm going to go to Pakistan in December and hunt waterfowl out there, which is going to be, oh, man, I can't wait. It's going to be amazing. I never hunted in Pakistan before. It's something that I always wanted to do. It's really going to bring everything about hunting and how I got started and my whole family and the heritage all together. And, you know, I can't wait to sit in a duck blind in Pakistan and just watch ducks fly over me. I don't even have to shoot them.
Are you going to document this?
I'm planning on it. Yes, I'm planning on it.
Please do. I want to share that experience with you, and that's about the only way that's going to happen.
Well, hop on the plane and come out with me.
Brother, if I can, I will. Don't test me. I will. Well, dude, I want to thank you for coming on. I want to thank you for being a part of our squad. We failed to mention that.
I think they kind of gathered that when I said why we were drawn to him.
Anyways.
Probably. But Gerard is part of our squad.
Yeah.
Yes.
I want to thank you for that, man. I want to thank you for the support you've given us. I want to thank you for everything you've talked about today. I hope that anybody that's listening to this will be able to take away what you, what you told us about. It's about giving the love. It's about being true to yourself. And it will come around. It will circle back around full circle, that it doesn't have to be, you know, something hateful rhetoric to get what you want, you know, to get your way or get your point across.
And you don't have to be Gumby to get people to like you.
You don't. Just be yourself.
Be yourself. Stay true to yourself and it'll come around.
Right.
Gumby?
Yeah, like flexible.
Oh. it took me a minute.
I got you.
Thank you. I don't know, a generational thing. Some of the younger listeners will probably be like, who's Gumby?
That was a good show. Look it up. But yeah, dude, for real, dude, I appreciate you. I think you're an inspiration to a lot of people, and I can't wait to see you and your journey continue to grow. And I just thank you so much for being on. But before you get off here, brother, tell people where they can find you and how they can watch, you know, your adventures.
Okay. And first of all, I just want to thank you guys, man, for giving me the opportunity I'm just a regular Pakistani American man who's hunting duck in California. So thanks for giving me the opportunity to come on the show and, make me part of your squad and, just letting me talk about my whole hunting journey and my food and how that's a big part of who I am, you know what I mean? And thank you guys so much for that. And if you guys want to hear, you know, more about that, you guys can follow me on GMAS101 on Instagram. I'm big on Instagram, and that's the only platform I have right now. I'm working on a YouTube, hopefully coming soon. So right, you guys can follow me on there, and I'll keep you guys updated, man.
Man, that's great, brother. Well, thank you all for being on, and thank you guys for listening to That Reload Life podcast. Guys, if it's the end of the show, and if you are listening to this and you've made it this far, you can use coupon code ThatReloadLife. You can head over to our website and you can buy you some sweet spices and save you some money at the same time. We love you guys. We thank you for listening. And as I always say, love hard, live well, and always
reload.
Reload, y'all. We love you.